Siren Radio.
It is time for us to say the weather forecast will now be presented for Lincoln from Gibraltar with Gabriella Peralta.
Okay, so the weather for Lincoln today is highs of 27 degrees centigrade, lows of 16 degrees centigrade, and it's a day of sunny intervals with a moderate breeze.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
And let's face it, there's only one place you're going to be at 6pm UK time, which is probably 7pm Gibraltarian time, and that will be the Victoria Stadium, Gabriella. Isn't that right?
Oh, is that for the football match?
A Lincoln Red Imps,
yeah.
Gibraltar's very own Lincoln Red Imps,
yeah.
Against Welsh side, the New Saints, in a critical match, basically. And New Saints actually competing in the Europa League after being knocked out of the Champions League. It's the second qualifying round, the second leg. Current score, Lincoln Red Imps 1, the New Saints 2. So you've got to have a bit of a battle to come back. You know, Wales champions have actually won the home leg 2-1. If you win, of course, Lincoln Imps will actually be off to Denmark to face Midtjylland. Yeah. You see,
okay, wow.
Yeah, exactly. That's the classic line. According to the New Saints manager, they've got a slender advantage, but the message is to do exactly the same again. Overall, we're fitter and stronger than them. Yeah, technically, they're a decent, efficient team, and Saints are actually Wales's remaining representatives in Europe this season. So the Welsh Premiership are actually looking at them. But what's the vibe in Gibraltar? I mean, is it a case of, you know, go Lincoln Imps, go Lincoln Red Imps even?
I guess so. I'm not that into football.
I noticed that, but it's okay. It's a pretty good thing.
Lincoln Red Imps is one of the top teams in Gibraltar.
Yeah.
And the Gibraltar team is, a lot of it is comprised of players from the Lincoln Red Imps. So they are one of our top teams, yeah. I'm sure.
Let's be honest, it's a small peninsula, small piece of land. So how many teams do you actually have in Gibraltar?
Oh, my God, we have so many. Football's really blown up in the past few years. I can't say exactly, but we have enough to make a couple of divisions.
Wow.
I think we have, like, 3 divisions. So we have enough, and we have our own championship in Gibraltar as well.
Of course.
I think the top teams are, I think it was Lincoln, Europa, and I think St. Joseph's, but there's also Montcalpe, and there's quite a few others. Mm-hmm. I think ever since Gibraltar was, you know, admitted into FIFA and then allowed to play internationally, the sport just really blew up. And it's always been, you know, football's always been probably one of our number one sports up there, but since we've been able to play internationally, it's just really gone off the charts. A lot of people want to, and I think a lot of people don't realise that we don't have professional teams. So when we play against in national teams sometimes, like we played against Celtic, for example, you know, you're playing against a policeman, a customs officer, I think one was a store man, you know.
You're not playing against players who are on £150,000 a week, are you?
No, you're playing against people who have a 9-to-5 and a family and play football on the side.
I want to ask the question, why is the side called the Lincoln Red Imps? Because I can tell Christian being a bit bemused here.
I thought you were talking about Lincoln Imps.
United, Lincoln City, obviously. But, you know, when people actually say, why Gibraltar? Why do you connect with Gibraltar? Well, Lincoln, quite clearly, you know.
So, I think the story goes that the owner from the club has some... Oh, my phone's gone off.
Yeah, well, every 12 minutes you've got to check it. And we heard on the news, effectively, so it's very important. Yeah, exactly.
The owner of the club has links to Lincoln. I can't remember how exactly, but I think either he was from Lincoln before arriving in Gibraltar, or he was around somewhere around Lincoln.
Well, I mean, without obviously you can make use of that wonderful World Wide Web, but as you're our gal on the ground, our reporter on the spot, our embedded journo par excellence, I think we'll settle a little task, Gabrielle, to find out a few information, a few snippets, factoids, whatever the result against the news sense, in the next 7 days. Will you be able to come back with some Lincoln Red Imp information?
I could, of course. We run it always in our pages.
Well, there we are, you see.
I had it advertised all over the Chronicle, and we've been running it there for the past few days.
I should hope so. The Gibraltar Chronicle and the Lincoln Red Imps and Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren Radio, it's just expanding. It's like a global franchise. In fact, I'm astounded that we actually haven't had interest from the United Arab Emirates or China, or indeed, you know, possibly some American multi-billionaires willing to actually sign us up now. It's clearly best kept secret. Christian, any questions you want to put to Gabriella about the state of consciousness of Frodo or the Lincoln Red Imps or anything?
I was just wondering, How big are the stadiums and stuff like that? Are they quite small, or are they surprisingly large? Like,
well, the Victoria Stadium isn't that big by international standards at all. A lot of times when we play our big games against major, you know, countries and cities, I think, you know, we go to Portugal and use their stadium, just because we don't have a facility. I think we have recently kind of done a few refurbishments to the stadium to make sure that it kind of goes up in category and we can play more games. So that, like, for example, Friday's game will be played in Gibraltar, and we are in the process of building a whole new stadium, just so that whenever we have big teams, we don't have to travel 4 hours to Portugal and then travel back 4 hours after the match.
Traveling to Portugal for a home game, it's a bit ridiculous, really.
Yeah, I have done it. I did it once. I can't remember what country we played. Maybe like Lithuania.
The greats.
And the Stones. Yeah. It was, you know, a lot of people did at first travel to Portugal to watch the matches, but I think it's now been a couple of years, and you don't want to travel every single time. I think people just pick and choose now what country we're playing against.
Selection, that's the important thing.
Yeah.
Gabriella, as ever, it's been absolutely awesome, but is Frodo conscious or unconscious? You kind of already answered it, because you said you already fed Frodo, so all's well with
the world. No, he's just gone straight to sleep. I fed him, gave him a treat.
Has he checked his mobile phone?
He went crazy for about 5 minutes because he wanted more food.
Of course.
And I was like, you know, you can't, because then you'll get fat. And
exactly.
We've been down that road before.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're making sure that he's, you know, stays at a good weight. And I think he's tired himself out trying to beg for food, and he's just fallen asleep.
Which I suppose
is
a bit of a virtuous circle.
Yeah.
Listen, it's all very well if you're Welsh and you've been celebrating the joys of Geraint and the French Tour de France win. Fine, you've had that. It's time the New Saints actually lost, so let's cheer on the Lincoln Red Imps today, 6 p.m. That's UK time, presumably 7 p.m. in Gibraltar. Who knows? Thursday, the 2nd of August, the Lincoln Red Imps versus the New Saints at the Victoria Stadium, Gibraltar. Last two questions for Gabriella, please. Christian?
Have you enjoyed your link today with us?
Thank you.
And will you be joining us again next week?
Yes, hopefully.
Brilliant.
Jesus wore. When he wore. happy day.
And if you actually had a nice helicopter aerial shot, or possibly a drone shot, covering the Kingdom of Great Britain, you would actually have the Edwin Hawkins singers in the background there with Oh Happy Day, finally climaxing as we actually arrive at the Sleepyhead Clinic and say, Stephanie Romoshevsky, Oh Happy Day! Welcome back to the programme.
Good morning.
Well, again, as ever, the energy, the positivity is great. Would that many of the folk who had the opportunity whilst listening online, possibly live, etc., to take part in the competition to win a light box. Yes, I'm looking at you, Christian Nokobovitz. If you'd only managed to actually get that sort of line to actually do all three, and you just didn't manage to get onto Instagram, did you?
Oh, no, I've got Instagram. It's Twitter that
Twitter.
I have.
Twitter.
Yeah.
You see, everything didn't get a Twitter.
I got halfway.
Halfway there and just fell asleep. You know, whoa. It's just, you know, how many folk are in that challenging line where you think, whoa, what's going to happen from our
point of view? It's just too much social media for one person.
Well, every 12 minutes. Got to keep this, checking those texts, etc. Clearly, I just did it because I thought, well, if I can do it, probably anybody can do it. I can't win because obviously I'm hosting the programme, so gone for it. That's the line from that point of view. But the time has come. Yes, I know the excitement is just palpable as we have just come out of our Gibraltarian link there as we support the Lincoln Red Imps in Gibraltar. Did you realise, Stephanie, that there was a fine football team in Gibraltar called the Lincoln Red Imps?
No,
exactly. It's spooky. Exactly. They're playing in Europe tonight, so let's hope they beat the New Saints of Wales. It's time to actually add that cherry on the top of broadcasting across the globe. Well, first of all, let's build here, because Stephanie, what is the prize? What is the number one prize for this thing, which entailed effectively people doing three key things, well, four key things, let's be honest. Registering for Facebook at Sleepyhead. Registering at Twitter at Sleepy Clinic.
I forgot. Yeah.
And then registering, of course, the tough one for me, which was Instagram, Sleepy Shevsky, which was there. And then sharing the Facebook routine. So not really that difficult. Yes, I'm looking at you. But overall, you know, we'll have to say probably not many people took advantage of the tremendous opportunities that are provided by winning this light box.
But we had a few, and so we definitely have a winner. So whoever has won has a really, really good chance.
Exactly. So, and let's talk about the light box itself. Why is it such a critical part of life, and how it can actually help do away with nasty me alarm calls and all kinds of other things, where it can actually help you wake up naturally and healthily on a day-by-day basis?
So light alarms are really nice because they do wake you up really gently. So light has the ability to sort of influence your sort of sleep-wake cycles. And so the light starts coming on in the morning about half an hour before your alarm is set. So it naturally builds up, and at some point in that half an hour, you will wake. And hopefully, and this is usually what happens, you wake in your lighter stages of sleep, which is much nicer than right at the end of that point, like, you know, at your alarm point, you've got this horrible noise that's waking you up potentially out of deep sleep. So if you wake up and you're feeling really unrefreshed and you have that horrible sleep inertia where you're just like, oh, and you just want to snooze, then it's probably not much to do with the duration or quality of your sleep. It's more to do with the stage of sleep that you woke up in. So if you're using a light alarm, it's so much nicer because you kind of just wake up. It's a bit like in the summer if you've got the curtains wide open, you wake up super early from the light and you're just like, oh, this is weird, it's 5 a.m. but I'm awake and feeling fine. So it's kind of like that. So they're really cool little devices.
And even though we are mammals, we don't hibernate in the winter, even though we might wish to. So it's also very useful when the nights start drawing in and so on.
Absolutely. So in the winter especially, they're good because they'll help you keep your natural sleep-wake cycle, and you want to keep that regulated to feel good all through the year. It's very common for us to feel a lot better in the summer. We sleep a bit less, we wake up a bit earlier, but we feel generally all right. But in the winter, we sort of want to go to bed really early because it's so dark at like 5 p.m.
I mean, one thing I always wanted to put to you, Stephanie, in terms of the whole system, is it's very much a case of, as it all of the, as it tends to occur with health matters in general, a kind of holistic approach that actually when you're seeing a client, when you're seeing people come to you, etc., do you look at the whole kind of aspect from lifestyle, from diet, from approaches, from all manner of things to kind of just begin to explore, you know, what the kind of common threads might be?
Yes, we do. Absolutely. We look at all the different aspects, but it's really interesting because in most people that suffer really badly from insomnia and related sleep problems, it always comes down to various specific and very common behaviours. Which we seem to have been taught from when we were very young. Like, for example, if you're not sleeping well, then try and go to bed earlier so that you're giving yourself a bit of a better opportunity to sleep. But as you probably know, we all have had this. You've gone to bed and you just end up staring at the ceiling and increasing your anxiety because you feel you should be asleep. You've got that expectation, but you're not able to. So we actually make the insomnia worse. So interestingly, it's usually in our behaviours, but we do like to blame things like food, hormones, drugs. We're very good at trying to make it like this mysterious problem that we can't control, when in actual fact, once you know the key behaviours, you start to realise actually we've got control and we can fix it.
What seems to be the worst problem to stop people getting to sleep, or the most common issue?
I'd say that one, like going to bed too early, especially when you've had this problem for a few years. People don't give themselves permission to stay up later because they're so obsessed with this idea that you're supposed to get 8 hours of good quality sleep. The problem is that you can't dictate that. You have to wait till your body needs it. So you're better off going to bed later. So even if that's really quite late, and waking up at exactly the same time every morning. And eventually, if you're not napping during the day, your body will dictate that it wants you to go to sleep slightly earlier. But you've got to try and build that sort of a little bit of a sleep drive, that sleepiness up. But in insomniacs, they're so terrified of sleep deprivation, which is common because the media goes on about how bad it is for us all the time, that we try to alleviate that sleepy feeling wherever we can. And often it's not the right time of day, so your body's just like, I don't know what's happening here, but there's no pattern, so I'm not going to enforce one.
Is that true? Because I've always heard sort of throughout my life, like different amount of hours, which are the best, you know, amount of hours to get sleep, you know, maybe 6 hours or 8 hours or everything.
But... Yeah, so everybody is different. That is what you should take away. And actually, the quality of your sleep is much more important than the quantity. So yes, it's important that you give yourself every single day a certain amount of hours. Let's just pluck 8 out there to have an opportunity to sleep if you need to. But it doesn't matter if you don't actually sleep those 8 hours. As long as you've given yourself the opportunity, so you've got that nice 8 hours where you're nice and relaxed, you're not doing anything stimulating, you're happy, you're content, maybe you're just resting. And if your body needs to sleep during that time, it will. But trying to force yourself to actually have 8 hours of sleep is where we tend to go wrong. But everybody's different. We are all, it's all variable, and the research is looking at massive population distribution. So of course most people sit sort of in the middle and seem to sleep, you know, around about 7 to 9 hours a night. But that's a huge gap, and it, like, discrepancy, like 7 to 9 hours. So everybody's different, and you're going to have outliers. So some people sleep less, some people sleep more. It doesn't mean they're depriving themselves of that sleep. That's just their natural sleep cycle.
Well, there we have it, as ever. Perfectly formed, perfectly structured together, just general perfection. At Sleepy Clinic, Twitter, Facebook, Sleepy Head Clinic, Instagram, at Sleepy Chefsky. Those are all three connections. We keep promoting those kind of things, find out all manner of things. You can also go, obviously, use that World Wide Web thing on your mobile phone every 12 minutes just to check the things that are going out from that point of view. But you have the power, Stephanie, to identify the winner of the competition for the light box at this moment. So without any further ado whatsoever, would you like to make that announcement, please?
Yes. So the winner of the light alarm is a lady called Leanne Knart.
Whoa, you see, she did it, she sorted the thing through, she sorted through, well done. I think it's Tessa Leanne Start, so that's brilliant stuff there. Congratulations, you can hear the cheers have gone up and down from Peterborough to Lincoln, back again to Exeter, and back to Peterborough again. Well, awesome. Big cheers from that point of view. Just think, Christian, you could have been a contender. It happens. And so could you do this stuff. Never mind, there's all sorts of with it. Stephanie, as ever, fantastic stuff from that point of view. As I said in the various email correspondence, we like to sort of spread the word of Sleepy Head, one listener at a time, basically. That's the sort of work that has been. We'll work our way through that. Have you had a recent interesting telephonic link with us this morning yourself? Has it been okay for you?
Yes, fantastic.
This is good. So are you back with us again in a couple of weeks' time where we can actually share more matters to do with the whole sleep cycle, etc., etc., etc.?
Of course.
That's exactly what we're like here. Just following on from that news, Sarutra, how often do you check your mobile phone? Is it every 12 minutes, Stephanie, the recent Ofcom report? Do you go on that basis?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I actually don't know how many minutes every... I wouldn't know. That's the key thing, good question.
Well, the takeaway point is just don't stress about it. Don't kind of worry about it. Otherwise, you know, it just adds to all sorts of other bits and pieces.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stephanie Romaszewski, take care. Speak again very soon. Take care now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
As I said, and indeed Phil Linus confirmed yesterday, if you want to see a remake of A View to a Kill, or indeed taking that franchise further, as Mission Impossible looks as though it's going to be the United States' most successful ever spy-fi franchise, probably heading towards the Bondian success of the United Kingdom and so on, why not actually adapt movies from the Bond oeuvre that effectively maybe haven't done quite so well, like View to a Kill, or even like License to Kill? It's just a thought. Who knows what Richard Fitzwilliams, our ace cinematic correspondent, will have to say as he escapes through Paris, as we've been listening to with Lorne Balfe, into another fallout from Mission Impossible. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, and I have to say, one of the joys, you know, of our little chats is that, whereas sometimes we agree, sometimes we disagree, and I have to say, been secretly hoping after your preview of Mission Impossible last week to be disagreeing, but alas, 8 out of 10 you gave it, That is what I would give it. And I have to say that it really is a movie that no one who sees it will ever forget it. And the reason they won't, firstly, Tom Cruise's stunts are simply amazing, because we know he does them himself. We heard about the injury. But, I mean, it's a movie that, well, it's long-awaited, it's much anticipated, and it had to be worth the wait. There's no question at all that it is Christopher McQuarrie directs for the second time. But the extraordinary thing with watching this movie was, I was so hooked by it. I have to say, I did find the plot, and I have to, for one criticism, wonderful cast, of course, but the plot is convoluted, and at times there's rather a lot of double-crossing as to who's playing who, and it can be a bit difficult to follow. In fact, it can be very difficult to follow. But I was watching 147 minutes. Now, to grip someone as much as successfully as this does, for that length of time, it is no mean feat. And so, 6 times lucky, this is a real bullseye, and as you say, the reviews have been ecstatic. I noticed the gross on Wikipedia isn't that high as yet, but it's going to climb to astronomical proportions, and it deserves to.
Most successful opening weekend in the States for any of the franchise entrants so far. I'd say those of us who remember the 7 series of the original Mission Impossible TV series, and then the 2 series that were made in Australia, and then, of course, the follow-through. Christian, would you be giving up nearly three hours of your life to actually sit and watch Mission Impossible Fallout?
I'll definitely be catching that. I do enjoy the other Mission Impossibles as well. I think it's always been something that I've enjoyed. But I was even, so what would you say? Looking at it, it does look brilliant. And
he always does aerial stunts, doesn't he? He's
yeah.
On a cliff, or he's actually in Dubai.
That's what I've always
he's
enjoyed.
He's climbing through various
yeah.
things. He's falling through Fort Knox, etc. Wouldn't that be vertigo?
I was just thinking, how does it hold up to the other ones? Or would you say, is it the best one out of the franchise so far?
Well, I mean, we're looking at the most extraordinary stunts. It's probably, well, I mean, I had a secret fondness for the last one because of a particularly brilliant sequence, the opening sequence of the Vienna.
In London, you thought it was actually there. You stepped out of the cinema, you thought you were in that telephone box.
Before that, the opening sequence in the Vienna Opera House, which in fact brought back memories
of Quantum of Solace.
In 1972 or 3 to Vienna, it was the way that was cut that I thought was so masterly. I did indeed step out into the, so to speak, into the second scene, which made it hilarious. But here, where this movie really, and we just the briefest summary, The Apostles, with plutonium cores threaten an attack on the Vatican, Jerusalem and Mecca, and Ethan Hawke and co, where we have Benji, played by Simon Pegg, and Luther, played by Ving Rhames, have the task as the Mission Impossible's force, which is run by Alan Huntley, played by Alex Baldwin, to save the world, so to speak. No question whatsoever that there is there's the dynamism in this that's impressive, and I do have to say, what really works, and I have to be so careful of spoilers, it's just the way, shall we say, will honour be satisfied that I just simply say the way the last half hour, in particularly the last quarter hour, is constructed. I mean, this is what grips you. So when, in fact, you've been watching and you've been enjoying, but when you walk out, you really feel you've had an experience that hasn't only included Tom Cruise whizzing round against the stream of traffic. My goodness me, it just occurred to me occasionally when in Paris, in the Arc de Triomphe, and you suddenly see the traffic there is so manic. Imagine simply doing it in reverse, challenging the French...
Richard, go back to 1987, see Roger Moore in A View to a Kill. It'd be...
I don't think that would be helpful point of view.
1985, I should say. I got the years incorrectly sort of addressed on that basis.
If it had been 1974, indeed, or 77, the same thing would apply as far as I'm concerned to Roger Moore. But enjoyable, though some found his movies fair enough, but there is nothing...
And if you want opera scenes, check out Quantum of Solace. Fantastic opera scene.
That has been an admitted catastrophe, and the reason was, as well you know, that to come up with the lamest excuse of all for making a bad film, the Hollywood screenwriter strike prevented any good screenwriters working on it. I mean, here we've got some stunts that are extraordinary, and those of us also, it's one of those movies where if you're a city lover, you will get so much from the visuals. I mean, they are absolutely extraordinary. In Paris, for example, the ambush of a convoy. Of that, very cleverly done, how it might be done, what could happen and what actually
could almost
happen.
Be a blueprint. In terms of complexity, I would probably just challenge one point about that, Richard. I think Rogue Nation was slightly more complex in terms of narrative structure than the kind of sequel, obviously Fallout, which features some of the same characters, but there we are. Watch them both together. Enjoy the whole thing.
Enjoy the whole thing, exactly. And also, parachuting into the Grand Palais, I mean, I have been to a party in the Grand Palais, and for some reason or other, Henry Cavill and Tom Cruise didn't come crashing.
Unbelievable. They were waiting for you to do it, Richard. They were looking for you to take the lead, clearly, on that basis.
And also, I mean, the Henry Cavill, incidentally, plays August Walker, the guy with a moustache. Lots of comments on that online, and that has been rather fun, who is said by the CIA's chief, Erica Bassett, Erica Sloan, played by Angela Bassett, and, he's also part of a movie that, I mean, one just sums it up, that these stunts, some of them quite manic, climactically, it's extraordinary, but to grip, again, I repeat, 147 minutes of this, I mean, that is an amazing feat, and whatever else, the publicity, whether it's Tom Cruise's injury, whether it's Henry Cavill's moustache, whether it's every aspect of it compared to previous Mission Impossible, the whole point is, it's a movie you'll absolutely love if you like this type of movie. You really will. I mean, no question about it. And Cruise, I mean, you know, what can one say about him? Mid-50s and he can do that. It's extraordinary.
It's obviously good living and Scientology. Maybe, maybe not. Mamma May, here we go again. The feel-bad event of the summer. Yes, it's from Private Eye, featuring Knowing Me, Knowing EU, Gimme, Gimme, Gimme a Plan After Midnight, and SOS. Could it actually be referring to a parody of Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, the trailer, with Lily James as well? Let's go ABBA, Richard.
Yes, and I've been here again. I mean, it's wonderful reviewing two movies like this, because these are perfect movies to please the fans, and that is, after all, the essential feature of these. That's what they should be wanting to do, precisely what they do. Set on the Greek island of Kallikari, director-writer Al Parker's follow-up to the 2008 Mamma Mia, based on the musical and, of course, ABBA's fabulous songs. Sophie Sheridan, played by Amanda Seyfried, 25-year-old daughter of Donna Sheridan, alas, deceased, played by Meryl Streep, and who is her biological father. They're the three fathers, Harry, played by Colin Firth, Bill, played by Stellan Skarsgård, and Sam, played by Pierce Brosnan, and she's reopening the hotel. And then we have cuts back to the original young Donna, founder of Donna and the Dynamos, and her life and what she made of it. A movie that, whether prequel or sequel, it's well put together. It works an absolute treat, including an absolutely hilarious scene set in Oxford. But I do have to say, a movie like this, firstly, to list the songs and list the cast, basically, I mean, the plot doesn't greatly matter because it just simply works. You've got the extraordinary cast of Christine Baranski, Julie Walters, you've got as I mentioned, the three fathers, no one knows who the biological father is after the first Mamma Mia, and, well, there's a lot of speculation, and no spoilers from me, if indeed it's revealed. And we've got Cher, Ruby Sheridan, the grandmother, arriving uninvited for this launch, and there's a terrible storm. And also Sophie's got Sky, her boyfriend, played by Dominic Cooper. He's very likable. Greek customs officer Omar Jalili, he must get a mention because I thought he was so amusing. And Celia Imbri is the vice chancellor of Oxford, and the first number is When I Kissed the Teacher. And we've got Waterloo, I Have a Dream, The Name of the Game, Knowing Me, Knowing You, Dancing Queen, Fernando, Supertramp. Need I go on? I mean, the point is, this is its perfection for what it intends to do. And what it does is put a bucket load of smelts over you, fair enough. People who go to this movie, that's precisely what they'll want. It's precisely what they get. It isn't awesome because there's stormy weather in it, which threatens to sabotage Soapy's relaunch of this hotel. But the facts simply are, this is a marvelous crowd pleaser. You can tap your feet into the tunes, and Bjorn Ulvaeus and Benny Anderson have cameos. I mean, there is nothing that one can say it's critic-proof, apart from the fact that I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm just longing to hear some of those tracks again. In fact, I was listening to some of them online, so, you know, what's up and up, it really works.
Richard, which one of those tracks would you like us to have as your farewell piece today?
Oh, my goodness me, that is very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. Let's choose Waterloo, simply because...
Really?
Yes, I mean, why not?
I thought you might have actually gone for Voulez-Vous or I Have a Dream, but no, you've gone for Waterloo.
All right, well, I'll change my mind then. I have Dancing Queen. I'll tell you what, I have Dancing Queen, The Name of the Game, and Waterloo. How about that? Three.
All at the same time. That'd be just a mashup. That'd be outrageous.
Well, I mean, the Spice Girls had a two become one song. I think three becomes one I deserve.
Well, we'll see what pans out. I probably will watch this, but only on DVD. I can't say I was particularly moved to actually go and see it in the cinema.
No, but it's aimed at a particular audience.
Exactly.
It satisfies that audience. It must get the 5 stars or 4.5 stars or whatever, because, I mean, those who are resistant wouldn't be seen dead in it, or might wait for the DVD if they felt, you know, just like a bit of light entertainment. Mm. But the fans will go, and the fans will love it.
And I suspect that Natalie Tuck, of course, fine correspondent and Midrick Drivet, will also, and of course, key member of the Meryl Streep Appreciation Society, she'll go for it. Christian, what about yourself? Will you be checking out Mamma Mia?
It'll most likely come on TV at some point. Someone will put it on and I'll end up sitting and watching it. I guess I didn't mind the first one, to be honest.
No, I thought Pierce Brosnan's voice was superb, actually, in the first one. That was really great. He's maintained that kind of singing quality for the whole
thing. And does Meryl Streep appear?
These are the kind of questions. It's like Luke Skywalker and Princess Leia. Are they there? Are they holographic generations?
I mean, Amanda Seyfried and Lily James, I mean, and Lily playing the young Meryl Streep, the young Donna. I mean, beautiful casting. But I mean, this is the movie that just delivers. I mean, it's right. It's critic proof anyway. But the point is, it's marvelous fun, and you can have a lot of fun as they do.
And with Ant-Man and the Wasp on the horizon emerging very shortly, all sorts of wonderful activities are coming forward. Richard, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, I most certainly have.
And are you back with us again next week?
I certainly am.
And in some alternate reality, Arthur McKenzie and Ian Lennox are indeed dancing to ABBA and doing the business in the big market in Newcastle with that in the background. Isn't that right, Ian Lennox?
Round about that time, yes.
Yes.
Arthur was the tough cop of the town in those days, all right?
Exactly. He was the dancing copper queen. So. Arthur,
you're back. It's
very true. Christian, you remember last week when Ian took great pleasure and delight in the friendly result of Liverpool 4 Manchester City 1?
Oh,
I do indeed, yeah.
Newcastle manager Rafael Benitez says the 4-0 thrashing by SC Braga in pre-season shows his side need to wake up.
I did not hear about it.
Fans need to be concerned, according to Benitez. He's a worried Spaniard, so Newcastle United defeat by Braga, worrying, according to Rafaela. Goals from Ricardo Horta, Yao Noves, Fran Sergio and Diego Souza condemned the Magpies to a worrying defeat, a 4-0 hammering from that perspective. Are you worried at all, or is it a case of, no, as long as Mike Ashley's in charge, all will be well with the world?
I think as long as Mike Ashley's in charge, all will not be wrong with the world. It's as simple as that, I'm afraid.
I mean, surely, you know, he's just looking to get money together to actually buy House of Fraser, allegedly. Can you not help him with that?
Yeah, they won't score many goals, will they?
Okay, looking at some of the comments on the BBC Post from this point of view, if you want to share the line from this, many other mid-table Premier League teams have exceeded Newcastle's record transfer fee on several occasions. It's difficult to understand why Mike Ashley treats Rafa so badly. It's even more difficult to understand why Rafa takes it. Not sure which planet you're on, according to another contributor, but you give the impression that Ashley is doing a good job and it's not his fault that the team is not performing. Wake up, get the sleep out of your eyes and take a reality pill. It's pointless having a decent coach if you don't have quality players.
Yeah.
A whole range of sort of aspects from that point of view. Time to do a bit more coaching, Benitez, instead of demanding even more cash. How do you think clubs
even
on...
Even more cash?
Exactly.
I mean, is this man the same planet?
I'm just quoting from the uniquely entitled Andy Booth's Creaky Knees, who also goes on to say, how do you think clubs on budgets nowhere near as big as Newcastle cope? Astute purchases, sensible wage structure, and quality coaching.
Really?
But no, let's all blame Mike Ashley, who has sunk gazillions into the club already. The fans are totally unrealistic.
Right.
So there we are.
Well, if you look at the actual spending record, net spending record in the Premier League this close season, you'll see that I think Newcastle will be about bottom, I think.
It's not about how much you spend, according to Clyde. Whatever happens to coaching players and putting a team together that plays as a team?
Well, he's one of the best coaches in the world, everyone knows that. I mean, I watched every game last season at home, and if I hadn't had him, we'd have been down.
Well, you haven't got Mitrovic anyway. He's gone to Fulham, so...
Yes, he doesn't fancy him.
So, I mean, you've got Tottenham up. I mean, Ashley could have actually taken over Tottenham in an alternate reality. He was interested, apparently. I bet they're delighted. But in terms of the sequence, are you worried, or are you thinking...
Yes, I'm worried. I think I was worried last season. I thought it was a relegation back from day one last season, and I think it will turn into that this season, because the relative strength of the other teams has gone up, and ours hasn't. You're getting teams like Huddersfield Town spending more money on buying players than we are. The thing is, Newcastle have lived in this illusion that they're a huge side, a huge club, because they get huge crowds.
Well, you're the only club in the city.
It's all about huge finance, and we haven't got huge finance.
Apart from Blythe Spartans, there's nobody else in Newcastle, really, and possibly Gateshead. Gateshead is a separate place, and actually going up to that particular area.
Sunderland's 10, 15 miles away.
Exactly.
Middlesbrough's 40 miles away,
yes.
And that's it.
Yeah. So it's a home game to Newcastle to kick off, and you might actually have Yoshiniro Muto, who might become Newcastle United's fifth summer signing, subject to being issued a work permit.
Yes, a Japanese player, yes.
Exactly. So, stop complaining, Ian. Enjoy celebrating the
I'm not complaining. You're the one causing all this. I'm resigned to it.
I mean, as we look to the Championship and we see Middlesbrough Football Club sign up, we see that actually Leeds United have signed Middlesbrough striker Patrick Bamford.
Yeah, £10 million.
Yes, exactly. And they've also got Jack Harrison from Man City, so they're all set to actually go into their first game at home to Stoke City this very Sunday. Are you confident, Christian?
Against Stoke, I would say so. I mean, this is Leeds' fifth signing now for transfers? Mm-hmm. I think
that Leeds is fifth, sixth.
Yeah, that's Leeds. Yeah, so I mean, I am that they're looking decent. I don't know whether they get promoted. I hope they do, but
I think if any club rivals Newcastle for being badly run over the last 10, 15 years, it's Leeds. It's absolutely terrible what happened to them. Their fall was greater than ours and faster.
Mm.
Well, that's because they didn't have the delights of Mike Ashley pumping in so much money and so many gazillions into the club, you know, quite clearly. And Ken Bates just didn't match the kind of line that Ashley was going for, and neither did the various Italian owners that have actually gone through to side of things. But never mind, it's all part of the rich tapestry. And it all kicks off very, very shortly. But as we know, as far as the Midweek Drive Morning Edition is actually concerned, there's really only one game that we're really paying attention to today before the start of the season, and it is, of course, Lincoln Red Imps versus the New Saints. Lincoln Red Imps from which country, Ian?
Lincoln playing Reading and friendly.
Lincoln Red Imps are playing the New Saints, champions of Wales, in the Europa League. Where, if you wish to go and see the Lincoln Red Imps, would you need to go?
I would guess to Lincoln, but I know this will be wrong.
It's Gibraltar. That's
really?
Gibraltar's major team there, the Lincoln Red Imps of Gibraltar. See the connection now.
It was a cunning plan,
Yep, always put together, and not Nebraska, you know, or indeed former president of the United States called Abraham. It just shows at the end of the day, there is only one Lincoln University of. It's a great home for Siren Radio. So what will you be doing for the rest of the day? Are you going to evade yourself of the fabulous post-thunderstorm world that we've actually got? Because I'm mooting about the possibility of actually heading up to Morpeth on Monday. In fact, probably will be heading up to Morpeth on Monday. So
what for?
Less things to do, you know, passages, time to actually work through, location reports to go on. And then after that, we're even considering a jaunt to Holy Island and Lindisfarne.
You'll enjoy that. Be careful of tides.
Of course.
Remember a film called Cul-de-sac?
No.
By a Polanski film called Cul-de-sac in the 60s.
We don't talk about him because of his Hollywood challenges, etc. Exactly.
But he was a brilliant film director. And anyway, he set a film up there in the 60s. And one of the subplots of it was that a group of gangsters got caught off in the tide. There's a causeway that links the mainland to the Holy Island. And the sea comes in at an incredible rate when a high tide. And unless you follow the instructions at the start of the other side of the causeway, you're in danger of getting caught. And your car getting swept away, and you're having to sort of climb into a little safety bucket.
I don't want
to have to hear about you doing that.
No, I would hope not. Christian, we've identified that you've had relatively limited experience of the south. Have you ever been north to? I mean, further north than?
I've been to Newcastle. Yeah. I think I went to Scotland when I was quite young as well. I've been more north than I have south.
Sue Arkabovich has looked after her son and made sure that all's well with the world. Yes, there we are.
I've never been to Wales or Ireland, actually.
Well, Ian, you have not lived. No. You have not lived. Cardiff, sheer joy. Exactly.
I've always wanted to go to Ireland, though, as well.
But in the delights of Newcastle-on-Tyne, were you actually celebrating Yorkshire Day yesterday, and did you think, surely, the run out of Joe Root, which sparked an England collapse on day one of the first test against India, was not a good way to celebrate? I mean, you know, there's John Wenham, he's almost in tears next door. He's trying bravely to actually do the mark-up, he's trying to put together the events there, etc. He can't cope with that kind of disaster. You know, Root was on 80 when he and Johnny Bairstow opted for a second run, only for Virat Kohli's direct hit to beat the dive of the England captain.
It was a fantastic bit of fielding, but also Bairstow's got to appreciate that Root and a lot of other players can't run as quickly between the wickets as he can.
Well, as we're actually looking at the out in practice here now, we think, what were they thinking? What were they actually doing? Their little legs going as fast as they can actually carry them. They get there, and then whoosh, he's finally stumped. He's out. He's run out.
It's a world-class bit of feeling, wasn't it?
Yeah, but at the same time, we should not be dealing. I mean, you know, this sparking England slump. For two sessions, this was a hard-fought day, one that boded well for the competitiveness of the remainder of the five-test series, and yet again, a collapse. What are you going to do, Ian? How are we going to motivate?
Well, I think we haven't got the... We don't even have the players. We've got one-day players, 20-over players, but we haven't got test players who are in below an innings, I don't think. And if you took Root out of the England team, I think would be just be a very, very, very ordinary side.
Rootless,
as far as
would
Bath
be. Quite literally the rootless. For so long, Root looked set to end a run that had seen him fail to convert any of his previous 10 half-centuries into hundreds.
Well, I mean, at least he's getting half-centuries.
Yeah, well, his half-century actually meant he'd passed 50 in each of the 12 tests he's played against India. No other player in the history of the game has made more than 9 successive 50s against the same opposition. So there we are, they're just like. So cheer up, John. All's well with the world and cricketing fans the world over.
Root's one of the best, world's best batsmen.
Do you ever get the urge to kind of take up the old willow once again, Ian?
No.
Possibly do some umpiring? I mean, maybe yourself on one end of the stumps and John Lennon on the other?
If they gave me an armchair, I'd consider it, but I must stand there all day.
I could see you actually wearing those jumpers around the waist and that sort of
way. I think I would probably get a bit tired of it.
Sort of Dickie Guy person,
make
really.
Make sure they're all out. Sort of get home early.
How's that? Yeah, that's exactly.
The first time point of appeal. How's that? He's out.
True. In the next part of the programme, yes, still to come, Jamie Douglas Hamilton, the founder of Active Water, will be talking about the whole challenges relating to water. In fact, how much water do you drink, Ian, on a daily basis?
I'm not as much as I should do, actually. I used to drink 10 glasses a day, but it's a habit I just got out of.
9 out of 10 British folk don't drink enough water.
Yes, I'm sure.
Exactly. 19% only knew that the recommended daily intake of between 1.4 and 1.8 litres is what you should be taking. 1 in 10 admitted that they only consumed around 250 millilitres per day. So given that we're heading for another heat wave, we're going to be talking about active water and how we can improve our hydration levels with, indeed, the founder of Hydration Active Water. That's Jamie Douglas Hamilton, who'll be shoring through this. It was actually created after Jamie actually rode in 4,200 miles from Australia to Africa 4 years ago, breaking not one but two Guinness World Records.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the sort of line we're actually taking. And the crew found that drinking up to 13 litres of water a day was flushing essential minerals out of their bodies, leading to a reduction in rowing power and hallucinations. So there we are. One day could actually change everything. We'll find out more about that after the news. But Ian Lennox, Christian's going to put those last two questions to you, as only a Leeds United fan can, although technically he also likes Liverpool. I don't know why. As only a Leeds United / Liverpool fan, it's like outrageous. It's like Manchester City and Brighton.
I've been made into a Liverpool fan. Oh, that's my problem.
Yeah. Off you go. Last two questions for our committed, converted Newcastle United fan. He's not going to switch to Middlesbrough or Man City, I don't think, in the near future. That's it. Off you go, Christian.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Yes, well, a bit about Newcastle United, yes.
And will you be joining us again next week?
I do hope so, and I hope we'll have better news as far as my team's concerned.
Well, it's Tottenham, of course. I mean, City, actually, it's 2 weeks away, because you'd start off from that point of view. City, of course, that's Manchester, play a team called Chelsea, actually, in the traditional curtain raisers for the season. That'll be the Community Shield. Who knows what'll happen?
Yeah.
Pushing, I'm pulling away from you. I give and I give and I give and you take.